Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. This is Ryan Finley, sports editor, the Union Tribune. Tomorrow, as we tape this on Wednesday, tomorrow is opening day for 28 teams in Major League Baseball. The Padres and Dodgers will be playing their third game of the season. This is a strange start-stop to the season, and I fear, with rain on the way, there will be another couple days off over the weekend. But we could talk about that another time or later in the podcast. Ryan, you're the boss, as I just noted. Padres, Giants, scheduled four games to start. Well, no, not to start the season. But whatever we're calling tomorrow, Padres, Giants get underway. And I don't know. Korea got me excited. Ryan, where do you want to start?
Kevin, I think it's worth noting that the Padres are going to play tomorrow at Petco with a new second baseman, shortstop, third baseman, left fielder, center fielder, DH, 3/5 of the starting rotation, and closer.
Yes.
Compared to the end of last season.
What's funny about that is you're right. And it is, I think, by some measures, the most turnover of any team, certainly of any contender. Yet, yes, those are all new positions. Yet you still have a lot of the key players.
Same pieces.
Huge losses. Juan Soto, Josh Hader, Blake Snell, Michael Wacha, Seth Lugo, Nick Martinez. Absolutely. But you still have a lot of it's this weird dichotomy.
Yeah, and of all of the newcomers, there are two guys who jump out at me. And Kevin, I'd like to hit one and then the other. I think we should start with Dylan Cease, acquired earlier this month. As the Padres were on their way to South Korea, the Padres paid a big price for him, but he's somebody who has looked pretty good in the two times he's pitched for them in exhibition games. What do we make of Dylan Cease?
Yeah, I think he looked better than the results were the other night when he made his sort of unofficial Petco Park debut. The guy is pretty nasty. He is. Now, I think it'll be interesting to see. He's got a better defense behind him by far than he had in Chicago. Does he find that as a comfort to throw more strikes? I mean, I don't know. It's a theory. That's something that Padres pitchers really focus on because, you know, yeah, Dylan Cease is a wipeout guy. He has led the majors, he did last year at least, in swings and misses. I think it's been for a period of time that he has. Obviously, Yu Darvish and Joe Musgrove get their strikeouts. Michael King gets his strikeouts. But they have a defense behind them that they know that they can count on to get through innings. And that's the real story of Dylan Cease. He does get through innings. They need him to. That's why this was so big for them, because it allows them to follow the formula theoretically, here at the start of the season, that they followed in 2022 to the playoffs, and 23 should have been to the playoffs with their starting pitching eating up so many innings. And really, the path there was going to be arduous. It's something we talked about all spring. If they didn't have a third guy, it was going to just require Yu Darvish and Joe Musgrove to be everything they've been in the past, and Michael King and Johnny Brito and Matt Waldron and a whole bunch of other young, inexperienced guys to be, you know, more than they've been in the past, because they haven't had that chance. They could have, but Dylan Cease, just this trickle-down effect just makes them, again, ostensibly, so much better.
Yeah, and, you know, Kevin, we used the phrase back of the baseball card a lot last year when talking about the Padres' offense, right? This rotation now, it appears to me at least, that if they pitch to sort of the average stats on the back of their baseball cards, Padres are going to be right in the thick of it in terms of Musgrove. I mean, they have to stay healthy, obviously, and health is a big deal. But Musgrove, Darvish, you're not going to be asking those two guys to reinvent the wheel. Cease, whether he's your one, your two, or your three, it may not matter. He's a veteran who's been really durable. And then, you know, you get to the back of the rotation, and the back of the rotation just has to do what most backs of rotations do, which is patch together five innings every fifth day.
Right. We don't fret over those guys. You do need them to give you 100 or so innings, because you don't want to have to dip too far down. And that was what part of the deceased trade was for. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, you want a stopper, right? A guy who can stop a losing streak. You want a guy who can be dominant and help you win those 1-0-2-1 games. But the starting pitcher's job is to give his team a chance to win. And yep, these guys should do that.
Right, right. One guy who looks like he's going to give his team a chance to win, and who I think has really captured the imagination of Padre fans, so far this spring is Jackson Merrill, 20 years old, starting center fielder, did not look overwhelmed when they were in South Korea. You know, he's already hitting 250, OPS 625. You know, you'd expect a little bit better as the season goes on. Kevin, he certainly looks like he belongs. Does he belong?
Yeah. You know, every ball he's put in play has been a hard hit. That's 95 miles an hour or harder. Three of them have been 102 miles an hour or harder. He makes contact. That's his thing. Now, you know, again, whatever, two games. He struck out three times the other day, but got his first double and his first single. He does not look overwhelmed. He is not overwhelmed. He brings a lot to this team. The guy's got to hit 240, 250, bring that energy that he brings, play a good center field, and that's going to be a solid rookie season. Is he capable of more? Absolutely. But that's what the Padres are counting on.
Somebody who's going to be, again, in the lineup, but in an unfamiliar spot here on Thursday is Manny Machado. Looks like he's the DH, at least starting off. How long do we anticipate that to last, and sort of where is he in his progression?
At least a couple weeks. So, you know, another couple dozen, maybe, you know, 20 games would be the hope at this point. Remember, he started out spring pretty strong, got shut down for 4 or 5 days, and it was a really gradual throwing progression from there. Right. I personally have not seen him make some of the throws that he was making earlier in spring, right? Like the kind that he will need to be making in a couple weeks if he is to return. But, you know, the idea is that he would be back early or mid-April. You know, I think history's taught us there's nothing to be counted on until, and it's a big deal. Like Tyler Wade, what is he, like 4 for 7 or something? He's getting on base. He provides speed. You don't want Tyler Wade and Eggie Rosario to be your third base platoon. I'm not saying it's the death knell, but that's not what you want. Now, of course, then you could counter me and say, well, then who's your DH when Manny goes back to third base? Well, sure. But you have a little more flexibility there to play the hot hand and you know, whatever. That's Mike Schilt's problem, not mine. But you and Manny, obviously, defensively, locks down that defense I referred to, which gives pitchers a lot of peace of mind.
Sure. Kevin, when it comes to the elbow, and pardon my ignorance on this, how is it that he can extend it to hit, and obviously he hit a ball a mile when they were in South Korea. He can extend the elbow to hit, and yet throwing is a different thing. Is it just a different motion?
It is a different motion. Thank you. I wanted to do two things. Okay. Not sound like an idiot and not insult you. Well, because I'm not a doctor. But the repetition and the exertion required to throw is far greater than hitting.
Sure. Kevin, again, you just mentioned Tyler Wade and Eggie Rosario. These are two guys who maybe in past seasons wouldn't be part of the team, much less starting at the beginning, the way the Padres have been constructed. There are, it seems to me, more of those guys on this year's roster than at any time I can remember since their sort of return to relevance. Top to bottom, does this lineup check out as a major league playoff caliber lineup? And if not, how can they fix it?
The answer is yes. There are 6 playoff teams. Every team has holes. If I took the uniform off of some of the Dodgers players and just showed you the backs of the baseball cards, you'd be like, who are they? But they get it done and they are carried. And hitting is contagious. They are carried routinely by Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Will Smith, and now Shohei Ohtani. We're at least assuming that he carries them. But I mean, it's remarkable. I didn't remember doing the research for a story last year. I keep track of these stats for the Padres, but then I went through and I did all the Dodgers games, and I don't have the stats right here, but I'll come close like to conveying what I'm trying to say. Like, we all know how much the Big Four let down the Padres last year in terms of clutch hitting, in terms of just having big games and having big games at the same time. Well, Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts had big games that almost on their own won games for the Padres. Will Smith and JD Martinez also contributed there. It just over and over, those guys were the ones that carried the Dodgers. And then your 6, 7, 8, 9 hitters, you know, like I said, hitting's contagious. And also they're just who they are. Plus, they have the left-right thing and they make the right moves. And that's something the Padres probably have a little more of right now, though. It's guys like Tyler Wade and Eggie Rosario and, you know, possibly Brett Sullivan and Graham Pauly. And in no way am I insulting those guys except to say that they're not proven major leaguers. And that's what we're talking about when we're talking about, like, right, like a deep lineup. We're talking about a contending lineup. So my answer is yes, this is a contending lineup. My answer is also yes, this lineup has holes. And my question would be, take Jurickson Profar, who, big fan of Jurickson Profar and what he brings to the team on and off the field. And on the field, that's what we're talking about right here. Look, he played all winter. He's a veteran. I mean, already, I forget what it is, but I think he's got two walks and a bunt single and like seven plate appearances, right? He's been swapped out for Jose Azokar late in games for defensively. But like, two walks and a bunt single, finds his way in the middle of stuff, creates two out rallies, gets 7, 8, 10 pitch at bats. Like, that's great. What's happening if he's hitting 220 in May, right? Do have that question, right? So, it's a lineup with holes.
It is a lineup with holes. Kevin, I promised we've gone 12 minutes without Tommy Pham's name coming up. But, you know, last time we talked, you said, you know, this could be somebody who this is somebody that they were talking to. This is not somebody who, as of right this second, is a San Diego Padre. Have they moved on? What do we think is going on?
Yeah, I don't want to say definitively they moved on, but like, they like their team and they like how it's interacting. And I'm not saying that's not why they have not. That's why they have not gotten Tommy Pham. But Tommy Pham changes the dynamic of a team, and you're adding that money. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot that goes into it. I think they're willing to go forward without adding a veteran player at this point. They like their team.
Is there a possibility?
There will be. I just can't imagine there's not an addition at some point when the dust settles, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, and again, later today and tomorrow, decisions have to be made on guys who are out of options. AJ Preller has shown in the past that he's willing to trade on opening day or on other teams' opening day. I seem to recall, who was it? Paddock? They trade Paddock on opening day?
Paddock on opening day, trade Vic Caratini the day before that.
Right. Is there a chance that something moves here in the next 12 hours?
You know, certainly there's a chance. It's AJ Preller. But like, look, when you're talking about guys being out of options, it's Pedro Avila. Again, big fan of what Pedro Avila has been able to do for the Padres. When teams know that he's out of options and he's going to become available, is Pedro Avila, somebody that commands you to make a swap for him? I just don't know about that. They like their depth. They got Dylan Cease. I don't know they're going to be giving away pitchers at this point. Look, when you're the beat writer for the Padres, you live in constant fear that AJ Preller has something going on and that, no one knows about it. And then suddenly it'll be out there.
Well, what a perfect segue to my next question, Kevin. Later today, we will have a story on our website, and it'll be in tomorrow's paper, about AJ Preller, talking about the trades he's made over the years, the ones he didn't make, how sort of his perception has changed here in the last 6 months or so, and what's sort of planned for 2024. Kevin, you had a chance to talk to him. Give us some highlights of your conversation with AJ Preller.
He's a fascinating, complex man. I don't think that the gist of the story is this. There can be no doubt, whatever side of the Preller aisle you are on, that he has made this team better than it was before he arrived and infinitely more interesting. Now, it's been quite a ride, and you can argue how much better. Is it lastingly better? You can disparage the window, right? The decade of the Padres, in Peter Seidler's words, the 2020s has produced a postseason appearance, an epic late season collapse, a postseason appearance, a postseason run. Nice, very exciting. Mm-hmm. And then an epic disappointment in 2023. What is your threshold for success? This is a team that had won three playoff series in the 40 years before, outside of, they had won three playoff series before Preller arrived. Okay. Outside of the Kevin Towers years, they had made one playoff appearance before Preller arrived. Now, right. Outside of the 15 years, Kevin Towers was here and they made four. So It's a look. There's a component that looks at these trades, the genealogy of the trades, the people he's traded with. And then there's the component of kind of trying to explain Preller's navigation of this sure. whole thing and what his vision has been. The failures, Eric Hosmer, Trey Turner, and the successes, you know, the National League Championship Series, the 2020, the playoff drought being broken. How about AJ Preller getting some credit for attendance? And excitement around the Padres that was not here. There was a reason that for all these years that this baseball-loving guy, his job was to focus on the Chargers. The Padres were a non-entity in this town for a long time, and A.J. Preller changed that. I make a point in the story that Peter Seidler gets credit for being the savior. You know who taught him that, you know, that assured him and convinced him that the Padres could be that team? It was AJ Preller.
It's interesting, Kevin, the things that I talk about with people I know who are Padre fans, this comes up a lot, which is Preller traded for Fernando Tatis, thumbs up, right? Preller's made, he traded for Blake Snell. And I think that was a great success. How much of the Padres' return to relevance was AJ Preller's dealings and how much of it was Peter Seidler's money?
Well, I think
can we separate the two?
If you're going to separate return to relevance and success, mm-hmm. return to relevance, Peter Seidler. Give right. Ron Fowler and Peter, I'm sorry, was AJ Preller. Give right. return to relevance, AJ Preller. Give Ron Fowler and Peter Seidler credit for, mm-hmm. you know, approving it, for buying into the division, to the vision, for securing financial backing, both from their own pockets and those of other owners. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But return to relevance is AJ Preller. Also did pretty right for that 2020 team with a higher payroll than Padres had relative to the rest of the league. All those payrolls ended up being lower because of COVID. Of course, revenues were far lower too. But now 2022, 2023 are really what we're talking about. Maybe 2021 as well. What we're talking about when we talk about the money. And I see the argument for absolutely. I mean, I'd probably say the success of 2022, give Peter Seidler that. I will say this. You are not getting Juan Soto without Mackenzie Gore, CJ Abrams, James Wood. I forget the other pitcher who's very good in that or might be very good in that group.
Yarlin Susanna.
You
Bobby Three Sticks, yeah, all those.
Robert Hassel III. You don't get Juan Soto without AJ Preller and his team getting those guys. I know that in the past 3 or 4 minutes, I've come off as, or I suppose you could interpret it that I've been a big defender of Preller, and perhaps I am. But I'm just trying to point out, like, you know, if he gets fired after this year, he was somewhat a victim of his own success because, you know, for a while it was okay to just be mediocre.
The thing to me, and this won't turn into the AJ Preller show, I promise. The thing to me that is the magic of what AJ Preller has been able to produce is he creates prospects out of whole cloth. Mm-hmm. He drafts guys, the Padres develop them, which is what Kevin, for 30 years, the Padres talked about wanting to do a better job of drafting and developing players, correct? Mm-hmm. Like every year, it seems that there is a new crop of prospects. Now, they often don't become Padres, right? The thing that he does differently than almost everybody else is he creates prospects and trades them and then churns more prospects up and trades them.
Yeah.
To me, that is what the AJ Preller sort of era in San Diego has been known for, is that approach of, you know, developing your own prospects, watching them become highly rated guys, and then trading them for major leaguers.
And the story gets into that as part of the kind of the whole approach. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the Padres believe they could have been the Rays or to a lesser extent, right? Like the success the Guardians have had building mm-hmm. from within, making some trades, but really building from within. Take a look at those teams' attendance.
Yeah.
So, you know, and look, I don't know that AJ Preller's necessarily all that interested in attendance, but his bosses are. Mm-hmm. So they've created what they have hoped to be a super team, or, you know, a team chock full of superstars. And that's what it takes to get to the World Series, they believe. And that's what it takes to bring fans to the ballpark.
As somebody who grew up here, Kevin, well, we both did. I must have thought to myself 1,000 times growing up here, I don't even want the Padres to be good. I just want them to be interesting. You know, that it was the years when they tried, it was just so much better to go to the ballpark. And it's funny now you look at this Padres lineup in a year in which they've cut $100 million out of the payroll. There are still four or five guys who may have their jerseys retired at Petco Park one day in this lineup.
They all have a chance, right?
Yeah.
I mean, hey, Steve Garvey had one hit. I know I'm depleting his legacy a little bit, but number six is up there for one hit.
Right.
Not that that should be our threshold for judging future people. But yes, there are difference making players on this team. Mm-hmm. Guys that have in the major leagues made a difference. And I will say another thing about this is they're locked up. Okay. Mm-hmm. You would be insane to disparage the Rays and their success. But you know what happens when you're a Rays fan and why there aren't many Rays fans? Besides that, everyone from Florida is from somewhere else. Right. They grew up a baseball fan of the Yankees or somebody else. Right. Same with Arizona. To some extent, it used to be the case here. Congratulations, mm-hmm. Peter Seidler, Ron Fowler, and AJ Preller. You've changed that a little bit. But Rays fans know that once a player gets good and is about to make money, he's going to be playing for somebody else. That is, the Padres trade him before they can get here and you get attached to him.
Right.
Or they keep him, like Tatis, as the intention is with Jackson Merrill. As the intention is they transition here to, you know, have some of their, the Lesko, Snelling, some of their young pitchers, Ethan Salas for sure, be here for many years. But they have locked up Joe Musgrove, Yu Darvish, Xander Bogaerts, Fernando Tatis Jr., Manny Machado. They have guys here for a long time. And that is a huge difference, obviously. I mean, for how long? I feel like it's ebbed. Maybe people can tell me I'm wrong. But I was hearing for a long time still that this sort of expectation from fans that these guys would get traded because it had been built up in people's minds for decades that if you were with the Padres and once you got good and you were making too much money or about to make too much money, you were out of here. And that's not the case anymore. That's not to say that some of these guys might not be flipped. That's always something in AJ Preller's mind. He built that whole 2015 team with the idea that, you know, they're all going to end up being flipped. Even if they go to the playoffs in 15, they're all going to end up being flipped. And so there's always that thought here.
Yep. Kevin, we'll get into the Giants here just real quick. Four-game series to open the home or 2024 home schedule. This is a team that is certainly acting like it expects to contend this year. They spent money in free agency got Blake Snell as recently as a week ago. What do you expect from the Giants here? And sort of as we plot out the NL West, where do you see the Giants?
All right. So I'm glad that I can sort of fake this because it's opening day and because the focus has been so much on the Padres, unlike many of the future Hot Lava podcasts, I really have not looked into the Giants. And of course, there's no stats to look at and who's hot or not. So there's like a couple things I know. Logan Webb will be starting opening day and Blake Snell will not be pitching. Evidently, he's still in Scottsdale getting ready. Maybe next week when the Padres are in San Francisco. They signed Jung-Hoo Lee from Korea. The Padres were interested in. They signed Matt Chapman. They have a manager who used to work for the Padres, correct?
I'm aware.
Is that right? I mean, I forget. Whatever happened to Bob Melvin? They have in the past 3 weeks, I guess, right? Become a lot more like, oh, maybe they will challenge the Diamondbacks, the Padres, because isn't everybody playing for second place? Isn't that kind of the thought here, right? Unless things just absolutely implode in Los Angeles, which, hey, we had firsthand, we had a front row seat to an implosion of a very talented team, or at least the disappointment. The Padres didn't implode last year. They were disappointing. For all their faults and everything, they were two wins from being in the playoffs. That's not an implosion, let's be fair. But it was epically disappointing. But everyone's playing for second place. And I think that you could make the argument. I mean, I think there's a lot of better divisions. But in terms of like that, the NL Central's better. I think the AL Central's better, but they've been terrible. So that's not really saying much, right? Mm-hmm. The NL West, it's been perennially pretty tough, and I think it might be as tough as it has as it's been in a while, I think. I know there's been some good years. 21 was a dogfight for most of the year. You go back to the late teens, there was some good Rockies and Diamondbacks teams. The Dodgers had to scramble. But, man, this seems deep.
It does. And, again, you talk about, you know, offseason acquisitions just within the division. Just within the last week, Kevin, you've got the Diamondbacks signing Jordan Montgomery. You've got the Giants signing Blake Snell. Padres go get Dylan Cease. Dodgers go get Yamamoto. I mean, that's just pitching, and that's just in the last couple months. I mean,
did I see something today? And the Diamondbacks pitching was already fantastic, and now it's like, wow, yeah. Right? Like, yeah. That was the only question last year. Was their pitching going to hold up and carry them? And it did, and they, you know, bring people back and add. And I mean, and did I see that their payroll is like $175 million now? I mean, that's no joke, man. Yeah. Now, I've also talked to people around the league that expect there will be a regression by them. Now, I haven't talked to anybody since they improved their starting rotation the way they have. But, you know, just because you're bringing back everybody doesn't mean you're going to have success. We seem to forget that year to year, even when we have great reminders right in front of us.
Yes. And I think that we need reminding sometimes that health plays a huge factor into this stuff. The Diamondbacks signed Eduardo Rodriguez, right? Left-handed starting pitcher. It gave him the wealthiest deal I think they've ever given a starting pitcher. He is hurt. They traded for Paul Sewald, who's their closer. He is hurt. Injuries and durability play a huge, huge role during the course of a long baseball season, as the Padres now.
Yeah, I mean, look, a part of the article I have coming up, and it's not, it says, I make a point, say he's not defensive about it, but he points out that, you know, 2021 was largely due to a rash of injuries to pitching. They started that season thinking they had pitching depth. And if you don't think that that didn't scar AJ Preller, and scars can be good, they create, you know, strength. Take a look at what he's done to his pitching staffs in the ensuing 3 years since the 2021 season, which before that he added Joe Musgrove, Yu Darvish, and Blake Snell, had him and Nelson Lamet coming back, thought they were going to be pretty good, and then were destroyed by injury and underperformance, sure, but destroyed by injury and had the worst 42-game closing stretch in like 100 years or whatever it was because suddenly Craig Stammen was starting three times a week. You know, so
Jake Arrieta in Padre pinstripes. Yes. Yeah.
So there was that for sure. But the bullpen games were overwhelming that year. I think they're in good shape. I do. I think that the Cease thing certainly changed the outlook. It's gonna be tough. Good for them. Good for everybody in the NL West that you don't play 19 games against each other this year.
Absolutely. Kevin, I always put you on the spot at the very end of this podcast.
So much.
And today is no different. You're not in the projections business. I'm not expecting you to do what Kevin Towers used to do, which was he'd write the number of wins that they'd have that year, put it in an envelope, put it in the top of his drawer in Peoria, then open it the next year and see if he was right or not. But I am going to ask you, who on this team, when they enter the game to pitch or when they step to the plate, do you lower your laptop for and do you just watch?
Who do you think it is?
23.
Yes. I think that he's back to that level in 19, 20, 21, where you don't take your eyes off of him. I because you don't know what you're going to miss, like the catch the other night, right? Yeah. I you know, when he's on the bases, you don't. Now he's, you know, he has learned over the years, you can't go everything 187%, a number I just made up, but he's an incredible player. Look, I'm intrigued as heck by Jackson Merrill, and I've heaped a lot of praise and comparisons on him. And I in no way is that meant to say that he will be that player this year or even ever be, you know, Fernando Tatis Jr. or whatever. But he's a really exciting, really intense player. And I look forward to seeing how the center field goes. It looks fine. And what he does with his ability to hit the ball, his fearlessness at the plate, his discipline that has developed so well. I really look forward to that. But in terms of lowering my laptop, it certainly is Fernando Tatis Jr.
Can't you see Jackson Merrill being sort of sneaky everybody's favorite player in terms of he's in the lineup every day. He's playing center field. He's a heck of an interview. He's great in public. I mean, I could see 5 years from now, my kids all wanting jerseys.
I can see by June, them wanting jerseys in the dugout, caught on the big screen, over there celebrating with Fernando Tatis Jr. He's young, all the attributes you described. It's why I would make the argument Ha-Sung Kim is the most purely popular Padres player. There's no baggage with Ha-Sung Kim at all, right? Like no suspensions, no questions about anything, never, you know, kicked or didn't kick somebody on his way to first base for another team and everybody boos him now, every ballpark he go to. He is just has a lot of those attributes that people just are drawn to, Ha-Sung Kim does. And Jackson Merrill has a lot of that. Now, a lot to prove for Jackson Merrill. His biggest supporters in the organization talk about needing to keep him in the bottom of the lineup, keep the pressure off, because as confident as he is, this is the big leagues. There's a saying, this is the big leagues. And what it means is what Jackson Merrill is going to be going through right now. This is the big leagues. So it'll break a man.
Yeah. Where do you come down on home openers? Do you like them or is it an amateur hour?
Why do you do that to me? Like I'm already not, like everything I say isn't already construed a certain kind of way. Look, when you go to 150 games a year, yes, you look forward to, you know, you prefer the 149 where, you know, everyone else isn't at, in the clubhouse, in the press box, getting all the stuff. Yes, absolutely.
Parking, working,
not just, you know, hanging around, whatever. But there's no way to not be happy on opening day. I just, in my opinion, there's just no way to not think that it is great. And tomorrow, look, MLB will call it opening day. It's opening day for 2018, so we might as well call it opening day.
Absolutely. Opening day, Padres, Giants, 1 o'clock from Petco Park here on Thursday. Kevin, next time we talk, we're going to talk about Mike Schilt's former team, the St. Louis Cardinals, coming to town. That should be a fun one, too. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. Happy opening day, everybody.